If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, welcome back everyone to the channel. Tonight we have a horrifying park ranger story about a birthday celebration around the campfire after working hours with a group of colleagues. And an inhuman scream comes out, something unearthly. And what happens when they go to investigate is, well, let's just say it just ruined the birthday celebration. Stay tuned. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. If you'd asked me whether werewolves were real this time last year, I would have rolled my eyes at you. And I was a park ranger for 20 years. So believe me when I tell you that a fair share of people have grilled me incessantly about cryptid creatures. Do you believe in Bigfoot, Steven? What about the Dogman? Okay, but skinwalkers are real, right? I bet you've seen some really messed up crap in Yellowstone over the years. Yeah, I've seen plenty of fudgery. I saw nature in action. Our planet is an unruly creature at times. Still, amidst all of that chaos, I always grasped the bigger picture. Nature is ugly and disordered, but that's the way of things. That's the way of life. When I worked in Yellowstone, I saw bears do things that would make your neck hair stand tall. But the carnage could always be rationalized. Nature always has a grand design. What I saw on April 3rd of 2022, however, could not be rationalized. That was certainly not part of nature's grand design. Whatever designed this abomination that slaughtered my friends, it wasn't anything earthly. As far as I could tell, this creature, whether a werewolf or something horrible, served no purpose other than destruction. It did not hunt to feast or to survive. It hunted because it could. Happy birthday, you Belland, Rick laughed. After 20 years as a park ranger, I had accumulated a wide pool of friends. At my 48th birthday party in the heart of Yellowstone Park, I was surrounded by fellow park rangers, my closest friends after decades in the service. We were having a huge birthday bash followed by camping in the woods. It was a spectacular event, far grander than anything I felt I deserved. But we were all good people, the best people. No, even that is an underage and a disservice to the memory of those I lost. They were the most important people in the world to me. I wouldn't have traded my life as a park ranger for anything other than, well, what transpired that evening. I joyously unwrapped the red ribbon parcel in front of me. I braced myself for whatever nonsense Rick had bought for me. And I was unsurprised to find myself faced with a butt plug. You might be shocked to hear that the present was actually one of the least offensive things he had ever bought for me.
I just thought you could do with a little something to loosen you up down there, Rick teased.
You shouldn't have, I replied. I mean, why would I need another pain in the ass? I already have to deal with you. A chorus of laughter erupted around the campsite. Rick patted me on the back and accepted defeat with that one. And as the late afternoon sun dropped towards the horizon, I thought to myself I had never enjoyed such a perfect day. Almost perfect. My wife and son were delayed. I had been messaging them all day, but there had been car trouble on the freeway. But I'm thankful for that now. So thankful that they never made it to the campsite. I praise whatever higher power orchestrated that blessing. I just wish others could have been spared.
How old are you anyway, Steven? Margaret asked.
Not quite as old as you yet, Mags, I cheekily replied.
Oi, watch it, you, she tutted.
We've not brought your cake out yet. I can always take it home with me.
As the sky darkened and the moon appeared, we gathered around a picnic table so I could blow out the candles on my cake. 48 candles that Rick and Harold had meticulously and ridiculously arranged on my cake's icing. It had taken some real effort to cram so many into such a small surface area.
Just didn't want you to forget how old you were turning, Rick grinned.
Remind me again, should it be 12 or 13 candles on your next birthday cake, Rick? I teased. The laughter around the table was sliced like a knife by a haunting sound deep in the forest of Yellowstone. It was not the sound you might expect. No obligatory howl or witful wolf. It was a piercing noise. A shriek, almost. From the gaunt looks of the faces around the dimly lit table, late on that April evening, I could tell that everybody was thinking the same thing as me. It sounded almost human. A shriek of pain or fear, perhaps, but something about it was very wrong, almost imperceptibly off. And the jittery reactions of everybody at the campsite was apparent. The terror in the air was palpable.
What the F was that? Tommy asked.
Could be some girl in trouble. Sounded like a scream to me, Brian shakily suggested. There were nods around the table, but they were unconvinced nods because we all knew that no human on Earth could emit a noise quite as terrifying as the sound that we had heard deep in the black trees that surrounded us. Suddenly the campfire lost its warmth and joy. It seemed like a weak dying light in the heart of a dark, unholy place.
Well, we can't just sit around here, Stacy said. I think Tommy and I should.
It was probably just a wolf whose cries carried weirdly in the wind, Rick said. Or maybe it ran into some trouble and unleashed a painful yelp. I think we're all tired and a little bit tipsy, and most importantly, it's late, really late. So let's just calm down to stop jumping at shadows and things that creak in the dark.
Look, I hate to ruin Steven's party, but I think Stacy's right, Tommy said. I think it's going to be hard for anyone to relax until we've made sure that what we just heard wasn't a...
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Person out there. I wouldn't be able to live with myself if we carried on partying while somebody were in trouble. Would you be up for helping me, Michael? Michael was an old, gruff park ranger who had the same seniority and steely composure as Margaret. And there was no way he would have refused any call to help. So he nodded in response to Tommy's request, joining the much younger park ranger on a stroll into the woods. The rest of us sat uncomfortably, struggling to get back into the party spirit at the perturbing prospect of something terribly happening out in the forest.
This is a bit stiff, isn't it?
Everybody needs to loosen up. Let's put on some music and start dancing, Rick said, pulling Samantha to her feet.
Come on, Sammy. Let's show these old farts how to party properly.
I don't know, Sammy sheepishly said, standing next to Rick as he fiddled with a Bluetooth speaker. I feel like we should wait for Tommy and Michael to come back, so we could know that there is nothing to give us any cause for concern. Rick had already put on Taking Care of Business by Bachman Turner Overdrive. He was busting some awful dad moves, entirely unbecoming for a young man in his late 20s. I was sure to tell him as such. Rick, there's absolutely no way that you know this song. Had you even been born when it came out? I asked, laughing. The mood had definitely lifted. We were all laughing at Rick's dreadful dancing, and ignoring the menacing sound that had emanated from deep within the woods. The next hour or so felt normal. I started to convince myself that we could have a fun party, other than the worrisome back and forth messages with my stalled wife and son.
As I said, I'm glad they never made it. A scream sounded deep from the woods, far deeper than the first sound we had heard. And this time, it was unmistakably human. The never-ending cry echoed around the endless expanse of Yellowstone Park. It was the terrifying yell of a dying man. I knew that. Even before we ventured into the woods to find whoever was making the sound, I think we all knew that. And yet, driven by a duty and a sense of helplessness, we rose from the picnic table. "Guys," Rick began. "That had to be Tommy or Michael," Samantha shuddered. "We have to find them." There were six of us: Rick, Margaret, Samantha, Brian, Harold, and me. We had all been park rangers for years, and none of us were cowards. We had seen and experienced our fair share of sticky situations. But something about the man's scream and the shriek that preceded it an hour earlier absolutely terrified me, and I knew it terrified the rest of them. I could see it in their faces. We knew the woods. We knew the darkness that nature could bring. But that's why we knew that something deeply unnatural was happening. Six flashlight beams permitted the dense cluster of trees in the forest. We strode onwards in a tightly formed line, calling out for Tommy and Michael. I had led a search party for a missing teenage campers about a decade prior, but this was different. The fear I had felt for those missing campers stemmed from sorrow for the parents. In the case of Tommy and Michael, I feared what might have caused one of them to scream so dreadfully. I feared, above all else, finding that thing. I prayed that we would simply find our two missing park rangers alive and well. I prayed that we would go home as soon as we had rescued them. I knew, of course, that these were fruitless wishes. Doom is a primal feeling that seeps into every fiber of one's being. Once it's there, it becomes impossible to deny. I knew our fate had already been sealed. Something was in the forest with us. And it wasn't something I'd ever heard or seen in my 20 years on the job, but I knew it was the thing that would make me run a mile from that dreadful park as soon as the day had ended. "I think we found something odd," Harold said. "I've been following a set of footprints with my torch, but, well, it's all sort of goes funny over here, though. Look." We rushed over to see what Harold was talking about. Sure enough, in the spot illuminated by his torchlight, we could see the spot at which the footprints transformed into messy swirls of mud, as if there was some sort of wild scramble. What petrified me was that there were no more footprints. They were only long, wide craters in the dirt, leading far away. It was as if someone or something had dragged Tommy and Michael away. "I've been a park ranger longer than any of you youngins," Margaret quivered. "And let me tell you, in 40 years, I ain't seen a dang thing like this. I've seen the worst that animals can do to people, don't get me wrong, but even the most fearsome bear wouldn't behave this way. Look, not a speck of blood. Clean trails lead away. It ain't a bear. It ain't an animal I have ever seen before." "I think we're all getting a little carried away here," Rick said breathlessly. "This is horrible, but I think we're forgetting the likeliest cause. People. And if a person were responsible for some harm befalling Tommy and Michael, this would be bigger than a park matter. It would be time to contact the relevant authorities." Before anybody could answer, another shriek pierced the night. Sharper, colder, louder, and nearer than the first. Samantha screamed, and Margaret consoled her. The six of us wildly flailed our torchlights around, scouring the trees for the source of the noise. We couldn't see or hear a dang thing. Whatever creature was producing that noise, it moved silently through the trees of Yellowstone, and that was a haunting thought. It only added to the supernatural essence of the being that seemed to be stalking us. With every passing second and fresh discovery, it became harder to refute that nothing about the night's events complied with the laws of our natural world. Let's just head back to our vehicles, Samantha said. I don't think this is something that the six of us are equipped to handle, mentally or physically, in the dead of night. We need help to find Tommy and Michael. We need help to deal with whoever or whatever is doing this.
Whatever, Rick scoffed. Do what you like, but I'm...
Rick was cut off mid-sentence, with a screech that shattered my ears. I saw his body vanish into the darkness, and his torch dropped on the ground before him. The five remaining park rangers screamed in dismay, and Harold started running after Rick, even though he had no idea where the darkness had taken him. Brian shot me a look. What do we do? I looked at Margaret, hoping that the most senior member of our team would have some miraculous solution at her disposal. But she simply shot me a lost expression. She shrugged, and I could barely distinguish her face in my torchlight, but her eyes had a vacancy to them. Samantha was looking at him for an answer. It looked like I had been volunteered as the leader, or at the very least, the deciding vote. I guess we'd better fetch Harold and find Rick, I gulped. I was all too aware of the fact that we were fewer in number with every new leg of our journey. The large pack of park rangers from the campsite had become a scattered collective. I had a direful feeling that our numbers would deplete, until there was not a single one of us left to tell anyone what had happened in that forest. And I felt that the creature or being probably wanted exactly that. I assume that's how it had avoided detection for so long.
Harold!
Brian cried into the darkness. We could faintly see Harold's flashlight in the distance, but the dense trees made it almost impossible to distinguish faraway things. The fact that the light beam still seemed to be moving was a promising sign. But I had very little hope for Harold finding Rick, just like I had very little hope for any of us finding any of the missing people from my birthday celebration. It was a doomed endeavor, as I said before, and I spent most of the journey messaging my wife to warn her that she should take our son home. My wife. But we're almost there. Me. Turn around now. Tommy, Rick, and Michael are missing in the woods. We think something's out there. It's not safe. My wife. I'm worried about you. Should I call Peter? Me. Sammy's been on the phone with the police for the past 5 minutes. It's all covered. I don't want you to do anything other than drive home. My wife. I don't like this, Stephen. I want you to come home. Me. Me too. I would have carried on texting her, but a ghastly scream caused me to look up from my phone. Samantha was gone, but she was clutching tightly to her torch, and the beam waved wildly as her body rapidly disappeared into the forest. Whatever had snatched her was moving at an immense pace, only confirming that we were not dealing with any natural animal. And when I looked ahead, I could no longer see Harold's torchlight. We were a group of three. Margaret, Brian, and me. I think we need to get the F out of here, I said. And that was when the night drew to a catastrophic climax. I could see it in their faces, Margaret, Brian, and they were absolutely ready to get the hell out of Dodge, but it was too late. The creature had thinned the herd, and it was finally ready to bring its dreadful dance to a close. A snarl more sinister than any snarl I had ever heard erupted from a gap between some trees. I watched in transfixed terror as a hairy hand swooped down, scooping Margaret from the ground by her collar. My torchlight finally illuminated the being that had been torturing us. It was a 12-foot wolf, taller than any creature I had ever seen in my life. And when I say wolf or werewolf, I'm simply scrambling for words because I have no idea what the F I saw in that forest. Its eyes glowed a ravenous red, as if it was ready to sink its teeth into a fresh meal. But that would have been too logical, too natural for an animal. It would have given reason to the brutish behavior of the beast. It was not there to feast. It was there to terrorize. And I could swear from the bottom of my heart that I saw a yellow-toothed grin form on its macabre, hairy face. Using its razor-sharp claws rather than its terrible teeth, the wolf-like creature started to tear Margaret limb from limb. It was a slow and, I'm sure, agonizing, painful procedure. Old Mag's screams were more blood-curdling than any sound we had heard that night. It was human, but horrifyingly so. That raw, primal fear oozed from her death cry. And before I could even register her body on the ground, which laid in two parts, separated by the hip, with blood pooling onto the grassy ground, the wolf had already begun to tear its claws into Brian. It plunged its index fingers into his eyes, and his screams rang endlessly through the night. To this day, I'm often convinced, if I had listened closely enough, that I could still hear his screamings in Yellowstone Park. An eternal death cry from a phantom trapped in those unhallowed grounds. Wait, Stephen. You saying you miraculously survived and returned to Yellowstone after those atrocities you described? I wish I could explain to you how I survived. I don't know why the wolf spared me. It taunted me with a ghoulish grin after slaughtering my friends before me. Perhaps it wanted me to live with the horror of what I had witnessed. I don't know. I don't want to know. All I know is that you should never follow an inhuman shriek from the heart of Yellowstone.